Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
You have year-end goals. Constant Contact has what it takes to help you meet them faster. Sell more, raise more, and build real relationships with your audience with Constant Contact's digital marketing tools, all made to fast-track your success. Put the go in your 2024 goals with email, social, SMS, and customized marketing campaigns built for you in just a few clicks. Ready, set, go to ConstantContact.com and start your free trial today.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk.
On-demand audio.
The Attorney General of Missouri, whose name has been in the mix for U.S. Attorney General at least a few weeks ago, Andrew Bailey, is going to join us after the top of the hour. I don't hear his name very much in the aftermath of Matt Gaetz pulling his nomination. That was one of the big stories of the day, but we'll ask Andrew that story, or that question, rather, right after the top of the hour. Some of you might remember in the days after the election, I read a tweet string by Justine Bateman. Not her brother, who's far more popular these days, but she kind of came out of the closet a little bit in the aftermath of the election. And her tweet string really drew a lot of attention. And I really loved what Peter Savodnik in the Free Press wrote about this, because there's some broader themes here that people can pick up on. And he joins us this afternoon, senior editor for one of the only places that you'll find real journalism these days, the Free Press. Peter, how are you this afternoon?
Great, thanks. Glad to be here.
So what we learned a little bit here in the aftermath of the election is that Gen X broke for Trump in a pretty big way. So explain and kind of give the backstory here of Justine and why that took off and connected with so many people.
I think what she tapped into was this feeling among a large chunk of Americans in their 40s, 50s, maybe early 60s, who are sort of at the sort of peak adulting phase of their lives. They're in the sort of so-called sandwich generation. They've got kids to raise and parents to worry about, and they're tired of the all-consuming ideology, the politicization of everything, not just the obvious stuff, the pronouns and all that, but the kind of feeling that every nook and cranny of American life was becoming politicized, was becoming somehow something that somebody could kind of put under a microscope and determine whether you were a right thinker or a wrong thinker. And so I think out of that comes this anger, this frustration with the blob, the sort of the kind of more corporatized center left, and that kind of coalesced into this strong turnout for Trump.
For her, though, for Justine in particular, obviously, and I think there's a lot of Justine Batemans out there, in whether it's music or Hollywood, that really, and we're seeing this maybe even manifest itself, where people are more comfortable wearing MAGA hats, et cetera. But she did seem to speak for a lot of people who may have been afraid to speak up about this particular moment.
Yes. Yeah, I think she gave voice to something which a lot of people are feeling, which is that you may not have voted for Trump. You may not like him or care for him, on some aesthetic or even ideological level. But there is, I think, a feeling among a lot of people that they can, as she put it, stop walking on eggshells. And there's a kind of like this feeling like there's a kind of a weight that's been lifted. This is the kind of perspective that she articulated, I think, very well. That's really sort of what she tapped into. It's the sort of, finally after 4 or however many years of being careful of all the tone policing of worrying about microaggressing or triggering or whatever, I'm free to be a human being again.
So, Peter, you—I don't know if you exchanged messages or spoke with her on Zoom, but you interviewed her, right?
I did, yeah.
And what did she tell you about the aftermath of all this?
You know, she was pretty reserved about that. I got the sense that, you know, she definitely got some blowback. I don't know about sort of like how it's affected her, you know, personal relationships or friendships or professional relationships or anything like that. You know, obviously she's in a rather advantageous position. She's had a successful career and she's done a lot. And I think, you know, is in a position where she can kind of weigh in on these things, but there is always like this, you know, price that you have to pay for being, you know, for saying something that's going to offend a lot of people, especially people in your own industry. And for that, I think she deserves a lot of credit.
I do, too. You know, one of the things I know that she mentioned was, and we, in a weird way, we kind of feel in St. Louis that we're ground zero for a couple of these things, sadly. One with Mike Brown in 2014, and then, you know, there was a follow-up, obviously, with George Floyd. But some of that nonsense started here in St. Louis with defund the police, et cetera, and BLM. And then on the gender-affirming care, we had Jamie Reed, the whistleblower from right here in St. Louis at Wash U and Children's Hospital. And that became a really, really big story. And, you know, I think launched a lot of this nationwide as well. But that was one of the issues that Justine brought up, right? The gender-affirming, in particular for minors. Let's face it, that's what this is really about, kids and, you know, changing their bodies and their lives dramatically when maybe it's a mental illness or maybe they're just gay.
I think she said something which was very interesting to me that sounded like something I'd heard from any number of kind of run-of-the-mill Republicans I encountered over the past year or two at, you know, innumerable campaign events across the country. And that was something along the lines of, look, I have no problem with any adult in America choosing to transition, but you better get your laws and your ideas, your ideology off my children and my grandchildren. And I think that, you know, what she was saying was, look, why can't we just have a conversation about these things? Why does this have to be, why do we have to be so locked up? And in a way, like what she said is in keeping with this bigger conversation that I think is happening now on the left or about the left, which is, why has there been this kind of corporatization on the left? Why is it that they said the old liberal spirit, where there used to be this kind of, you know, vigorous exchange of ideas and arguments, seems to have been eclipsed by this conformity and this, again, this rigidity? And so I think she tapped into that feeling and you know, explains, I think, a lot of why Gen X broke, I think, by something like 10 points for Trump.
Do you think she has an understanding? Because I can bring this full circle to the way that I introduced you on the show, Peter Savonik, because I feel very strongly that journalism is taking place at the Free Press and, you know, on Substack, but it's not taking place at the New York Times, which, you know, Barry left. And it's one of the issues with everything that you just discussed is because of the way that the LA Times and Latinx and, you know, CBS News and CNN, the way that they cover all these stories, you'd think that they are speaking for the masses when they're not.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like, one of the things that's so troubling about legacy media is that there are tons of really wonderful journalists at a lot of the old institutions. It's just that as a group, these institutions, or collectively, they have given way to a more kind of radical voice. And so I think if you were just reading, you know, the New York Times or watching CNN in the lead up to the election, you would have been shocked by what happened on November 5th. I think if you were consuming, you know, the content that we're churning out at the Free Press, you wouldn't have been shocked. You might have been a little bit surprised by the margin, but you would hardly have been shocked. I think you would have thought to yourself, well, this is in keeping with lots of things I've been reading about and listening to and watching, and it's the kind of direction the country has been moving in for the past 6, 8, 12 months.
I agree with you wholeheartedly, which is why, by the way, I recommend the Free Press all the time. I think you guys do great. Peter, thank you so much for jumping on here with me. It was
thank
a great
Mark.
Column, and have a great Thanksgiving.
Likewise.
All right, take care.